So back on the audio drama production podcast for I think possibly either the third or the fourth time. My new best friend, we drove around Anaheim in a car together quite recently, Mr. Casey Wayland. How are you doing, sir?
Good, good. How you doing? I just remembered we ran a lot of stop signs too.
Yeah, and we had Justin and Ron who were at the meetup as well. They were following us and you were just jumping the red lights, but they were like severely jumping them because we were going to uni.
We had a little convoy going and unfortunately we had a couple traffic in California, you don't get left behind at a light and it's like, it worked out all right. They didn't run the lights too bad, and no one got any tickets, so I guess that's all that matters.
Yeah, it was a great day. I spoke about it on the podcast just recently there, so getting together with all the different audio dramatists. Some people I've known online for years. Some people I'd just found out about recently. So great just to come together and talk shop, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely pretty amazing to see everybody in the flesh and in person. And I know they've been talking about getting one of these meetings together for a long time, and I'm glad we're able to actually make it happen. And I think part of it is just being able to have a space to go to now is kind of fun. So hopefully we'll do it again in the next quarter. Maybe we're thinking about doing two a year, I think is what we were talking about, something like that.
We were in your office space. You've got these two offices kitted out. How long have you been in that space?
We're pretty new to there. I think we moved in around February of this year. So we're still pretty new into those spaces, and it's taking some time to get set up entirely in there and get all the pieces that we need. And what we did was we started with only one office doing, an apartment 2C, which is our YouTube live stream program that we're trying out. And so after that, then it just made sense if they had an office space available down the hall and we had some upcoming more work that was going to come. And so I was like, you know what, let's do this. Let's actually get a second space going and get these editing, booths up and running.
And these are places that you've kitted out, you've sound treated them, so are you planning to do a lot of recording in there as well?
No, I think most of what we're going to do is a lot of just editing and some minor post-production recording, Foley and things like that. I don't think we're going to be doing any major voice recording in there, because voices tend to reverb very easily, whereas you can get away with doing some Foley stuff depending on the environment. So the sound space will be good for that, but I don't think it's good enough for voices. In particular, I don't think having that many bodies in there at the same time, if we're doing our group recordings, because the air conditioner has to, shut off. And so that many bodies moving around probably would overheat. So it's a good space to start out at. And then, for the actual cast recording, you can just do those times at another location.
So the big news for you recently was getting lockdown out there, the sequel to the main series of We're Alive, and I've listened through it myself, thoroughly enjoyed it as I expected I would. What sort of feedback have you had from it so far?
So far, it's been great. I haven't really seen any negative feedback from it. Then again, I haven't looked through all the reviews yet. I probably should take a look. But for when it was coming out and everything was going through on iTunes, we got a lot of great reviews, and man, that lockdown was sort of, in a way, sort of a cursed production, because it was so much to get done, and a lot of hurdles, and just everything that could have gone wrong at different times went wrong, and yeah, so it was just a massive, massive undertaking to get this thing out, more so than any other season of We're Alive, just because of the complications and scope of the project.
I want to sort of dive into the making of lockdown and things that you took from the original series and you learned from them, and maybe you've done some different stuff. But just seeing as you've mentioned that, how do you go about dealing with the severe pressure of a project like this? You've done a Kickstarter, you got a huge amount of backing, there's a lot of money riding on it. You've just had a baby as well, you've got a young family there, so there must be times where you really feel under the cosh. How do you deal with that?
I don't know. This was really, honestly, one of the most difficult times I think I've ever had in my life to get things done. Because I was, add all that, And then add in, like, plus I was trying to leave my job. And it's just the baby was so much work, and we had editors leave the project and bail on at me at different times. So it's like it was just one complication after the next, and there's so much pressure coming from Kickstarter. And that honestly, that was one of my main hesitations coming in for bringing in Kickstarter, is the minute you do a Kickstarter, it's a lot of maintenance to keep up, and also you have to constantly be, you know, keeping them at a moment's notice of notifying them of information. And it's just a lot of pressure, like you're saying, to come through and not only do it, but also make it good. So it's like there's so many things going on at the same time that it's very easy to kind of buckle under the pressure and screw up. And I had a bunch of moments where I kind of almost lost it, but barely held on to the reins.
Are you someone who, like, will go down to maybe 2-3 hours of sleep because you're just doing everything, or are you able to switch off from things completely at times?
No, I can't get by with only 3 hours of sleep. I need a little bit more than that. I used to be able to do next to nothing with the military. Like, I was be able to, 4 hours, 5 hours is fine. And, like, even today with the baby, I only got, like, 4 because I just wasn't able to sleep last night, and it's like I'm just dragging knuckles across the floor now. It's like, nah, my body doesn't handle that much well anymore. But it was one of those things where I had a lot of support from my wife, where basically I would, like, come home from my 9-to-5, kiss my wife on the forehead, hug my son, and then go out to the garage and continue, like, working for the next, like, 6 hours or so. So it was pretty heavy and really hard for a long time there. And it crushed me a little bit, and it's really hard to deal with, I think. But for the most part, I just kind of said, just keep going and get this thing done.
I suppose you've got the benefit of knowing, like, what the rewards are, because there's a certain feeling you get when you've worked hard on something and you get it out there. So you've obviously had a lot of that with the main series of We're Alive. So that's presumably been a big driver in this, that you knew how it would feel to get it done.
Yeah, that's one of the things, is like, I knew that once I get it out there, people will listen to it. And it's really, like, I want to spend the time to make it perfect, because really, from the core concept of lockdown, I've just loved every bit of it. Like, I've loved the concept for it. I love the environment, the characters, like, all the pieces seem to come together. And I also got to play in the medium, I think, in ways that are a little bit more experimental than the standard audio theater or audio drama out there. Audio theater being the new branding that I'm pushing. So it just took a lot of, you know, just to get it across the finish line was a lot, but I really believed in it from all the way back to the script, and saw that it had a massive amount of potential. I still see it as actually, in my opinion, one of the better audio dramas ever made, because it's succinct, it's self-contained, it works within its own, and it's one of the few ones that's like 5 hours long with custom compositions, and I'm just really proud of it. And I think that it can definitely... and one of the reasons why I think Lockdown was, you know, one of the reasons I created it was... You bring in all the things that you've learned from We're Alive, making a really good, tight production like I wanted to make. That way, if you have somebody new coming on, they're like, oh, this sounds awesome. And they give us a little bit more leeway if something's not as perfect in the original series. So hopefully it was a way to get new people to come on board.
That brings me on nicely to my next question. What were the key things that you learned making the main series of We're Alive that you took into lockdown and you were able to do things a bit differently?
One of the big things I did differently about this one was we produced it at the same time in terms of the recording. That worked out really well because logistically it was easier to get everyone together. In some ways it was, some ways it wasn't. There was some times where I had to, like, coordinate with different actors, and we had to adjust the schedule a lot. So unfortunately, there were some pluses and minuses to both of those things. But all in all, having everyone there and knocking out all the recording at once was a lot easier to do than to spread it out over like 5 months of things. The challenges with that is you have to have your script completely done and polished by that time, and there's no wiggle room for adjustments later. With We're Alive, like, if I'm producing chapter 9 right now and writing for 12, and something comes up in 9 that I want to make an adjustment for, I can do it in 12. Whereas Lockdown is like, no, you don't get that opportunity. So that was a challenge. I think other things that we really did that we weren't able to do when we're live because we did it all at once is pickups. Going back and seeing like, okay, this line doesn't work well here. We need to replace this line to make sure it illustrates what's going on in this scene. And so there's a lot of that took place. And I think there's some benefits and there's honestly a lot more challenges too. So it's kind of like one of those experimentations where it's like, let's try this a new way and see what works and what doesn't.
We Are Alive, the main series, although it started with a group of survivors in one place, became this pretty sprawling story because you had all these different locations, different character groups. When we go to lockdown, we're very much contained. You've got that actual feeling of the jail because you're contained with these characters. Was that a very conscious thing that you wanted to downsize to a very small group of characters and spend a lot of time exploring each of them?
Yeah, that was one of the things, and this is sort of like one of my philosophies of audio drama, is keep the cast small so that they're incredibly recognizable. The one of the concepts that I'm kind of pushing is that a human's response to being able to identify a voice is slower the more characters that you add on, meaning that it's harder to comprehend everything. Like, the minute somebody starts saying something in the scene, it might take you a second to figure out who's saying it, especially in a larger cast. So To sort of like make the story so small and self-confined, it allowed me to do more exploration with the characters, go a little bit deeper, connect with them. Also, because it's a small cast and a miniseries, you have to connect with them faster. So I just felt like all these good restrictions ultimately led to a better like storytelling device. And I also really wanted to feel claustrophobic in this space and make it really tight. And the smaller amount of characters that you have, the more chance you have for like internal conflict with each other. And really it is a journey that you have to go with the characters because you have to sort of relate to what they're feeling at every time. And I think throughout the story, even though like there may not be a huge amount of action throughout the beginning and towards the middle, it like starts to build up a lot more. You get to know everybody intimately so that when you get into the really, you know, more, I'd say, over the top, bigger moments, you're with them and you're rooting for them. And the good and bad is more of a win and a loss to the listener.
You did some quite creative narration techniques as well. In the main series, we had obviously the characters were journaling and those were able to tell us stuff that we couldn't actually see. In lockdown, we've got the main character and you've actually brought in some of the characters from the main series and he's actually telling CJ what happened because this happened in the past. You've spoken in the past that you do believe that there is a place for narration in audio drama, but do you prefer to see it done in this sort of creative way where it's in the story world rather than the disembodied voice?
Yeah, I think, well, one of the big things about VO narration that can sometimes get lost is characterization. And also, you also get an injected God perspective sometimes. And I think whenever you make that choice, it's less interesting. If you can ever, like, insert a character and have them sort of be your guiding voice, but at the same time, be able to let them be a character still at the same time. I think ultimately that's the best way to go to illustrate very clearly to the listener. Because you do need, you have those moments where you need to have somebody coming in and talking about it a little bit further and really explaining it to what's going on to make sure it's clear. But if you get to have a character perspective that is like the interview process that we're doing here or, you know, something where it's a live version of them, you get to have the, you know, the feeling of, are they saying absolute truths? That kind of thing. Whereas if you have a voiceover, it's like you're automatically assuming that this is true. It's sort of like there's not as much, you know, tangible flexibility in there of like, who is this perspective that we're dealing with? So I think that by not having it written on the page and sort of having that device of the interview process, you get to like dive deeper into the characters through your voiceovers rather than it being just some like, you know, sidetracking guideline.
Yeah, I suppose. I never thought of it that way. The disembodied voice, they never lie to you. It would kind of throw you if you were listening to something and the narrator was openly lying.
So that's actually something that we played with a little bit in lockdown is like, can you get the voiceover person or the narrator sort of to lie to you a little bit, but also at the same time maintain that the rest of the story was true? Because one of the big things you don't want to do is you don't want to invalidate the journey that everyone has gone on. So the lie that we do in the story is very short and brief, whereas, you know, if we did it for the entire segment, it would really derail the entire production.
There was a really good mix of character building and conversations as well as action. When you are writing something like this, how conscious are you of where the balance is? Or is it something that you just don't think about? Do you just go with the story and wherever there's action, and wherever there's not, you know, it's character building, conversations and things like that?
Some of that comes out in the writing when you're on the page, but a lot of it, for me anyway, comes from the outline. It comes from me planning ahead, being like, okay, where are the big beats in this thing? Where are the dividing moments of where this works? And one of the things that Lockdown did a little differently was we did very long portions of the story. That way that you can really experience what's going on and not have to like have any devices of cliffhangers in there, and you can really build with the characters. So It was kind of methodically planned out, and in that way, why I actually split the episodes down further than what I was originally planned. It was going to be three, but then I split it down to six because three was just way too long to have two hour parts. It's great for immersion and feeling in the place, but it's bad for production and advertisers and things like that. So there's some learned things there, but really the action and character development has to be like planned out from the beginning, and the balance has to be made, because it's all about like story structure. Is like, how do you gotta keep everyone involved and listening, and so you have to constantly go back and forth of like, okay, action building. And really with audio drama, because you have to sort of set up the action moments to make them a little bit clearer, you get to have that balance in there at the same time. So the medium actually sort of assists in that way.
When we spoke at the start of the interview, you mentioned the name Audio Theatre for the Mind, and that's what Lockdown is kind of branded as. What's your plans with this name? I know you've trademarked it, so what's your sort of long-term aims with something like this?
One of my things that I'm working on with pushing for the trademark and getting all those things filed is to make it so that the actual title and branding is protected in a way. One of the things that we're seeing now in the audio drama community is there's a lot of content coming out. There are people producing it for the first time. Lots of people coming to the stage who have GarageBand or Audacity. The tools are out there. You can make audio dramas almost virtually for free with just a laptop nowadays. The major difference between them is the quality. And so my intention with this is sort of like put a quality barrier on things that are of a lower standard of production. It's not meant to be like a negative to anybody else who's in the smaller starting out, things like that. What it's meant to be is like so that when an audience or a listener or an audience member comes to this to like looking for what they want to listen to, they have a brand of something, a style that they're looking. So like on movies and film, you have documentaries, you have different genres of films where you have like a horror, a sci-fi, a children's, you know, different types. Well, I think inside the audio drama community and the productions that are being made, you have those different types that you can do in those different genres. And this is a particular genre of audio drama in particular that focuses on more of the action of things. Let sound be a character. Limited narration. This isn't like a book that's being translated into like a multicast kind of thing. It's like, no, there's no narrator reading all the in-between lines and having voices come in. It's sort of like a different style and approach. And by having that label and that brand sort of as a filter, it's like, okay, well, if we can establish in the beginning, say for instance, somebody's like, hey, I think my production qualifies. Here it is. We're hoping to sort of set something up where it's like we can have like several people kind of like weigh in on it from the community. It's sort of like a building of a gate, if that makes sense, of like letting content in that meets a certain standard and keeping content out that doesn't. It's sort of like a little bit of a pre-qualifier. And I know it's not going to be a popular thing among some producers. They're going to see it as like, well, why do you feel like you are the one that should be controlling this? And the reason why I'm sort of like spearheading it in this way is because I do believe that the medium can improve and get better, but we sort of do have to let the cream rise to the top in order to get new people in. Because I'll be honest, if somebody's coming to the medium and they just listen to all the bad stuff, they could get turned off on it. And it's I hate to be mean and be like, oh, these are bad productions, but there are bad productions out there. And it's just, you have to sort of like find a way to be as approachable to the listener as possible, because we don't want to get people to get burned out. So it's sort of like a quality check, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, at the moment we've got things like iTunes, but we don't really have any control over iTunes. Obviously, they do pick really good stuff to feature, but you know, you type in something like audio drama and everything is just thrown in together. So it can be difficult when you're a new listener to find the good stuff, because it's the good stuff that's going to inspire you to maybe create something of your own. It's going to set a bar for you to aim for. And although we start, you know, we have to start somewhere, and we've all made pretty bad stuff in the beginning, but as long as you're always striving and learning and trying to improve yourself, I think it's going to be a good thing. Do you envisage it as something like a podcast network then?
Maybe, or not so much a network, more or less maybe like, for lack of a better word I can't think of right now, is like a council for people to kind of like, you know, make sure that there's checks and balances. The other thing also is just kind of like to help divide up the medium a little bit in terms of the genres. Because like when you say audio drama, that could mean so many different things. Like, is it, because there's different like production styles. Like, is it a found footage one where you have found segments of, you know, something in the world. So it's like sort of like the what was that movie?
The Blair Witch.
So like Blair Witch or any of those styles where they're like finding the footage, and so that's a certain like documentary audio drama style. And then you have other ones that are like, they are the books on tape, so to speak, with a multicast. What is that defined as? And what about the ones that are like War of the Worlds that are just basically mimicking and doing fake news broadcasts and things like that? So there's all these different types out there, and I think if we can start like dividing them up in terms of like categories, we'll be able to actually further define the medium and help people like, oh, I like this style, this is what I'm doing. I like comedies, I like, you know, dramas. It's sort of that classifications of things. Like, I love documentaries, or some people just hate documentaries, so that way they know what they're getting into ahead of time.
What are some of the key criteria that you see for getting access to be in an audio theatre for the mind?
Well, I think part of it is definitely that minimal narration, using sound as a character, letting sound drive the story. Sound effects and Foley work, I think, is a key element of that. Foley especially, I think, is one of the elements that most people take for granted in terms of the audio space. But for me, I see Foley as the only way to be able to like effectively communicate action in a scene without using dialogue. And so you need to sort of have that balance in order to be able to like create something that's truly designed for your mind. Like, literally the elements of audio that are layered, they're done in a certain way and written in, and just all the pieces come together to try and paint a picture clearly in your head. So it's like how you qualify that and how you whittle that down. I have a couple, like I love a list of things that I'm kind of like thinking of ways of making that work. And also just kind of like, it's at its core audio designed to paint a picture. And as long as that's the precursor and that's the case, I think that's going to be pretty much the prerequisite.
What's the next steps for it all then? And what's your hopes for maybe the next couple of years?
For me, it's all about building. Right now, I left my full-time job this month, and I'm still working on getting it to where I can start making an income and a revenue to make it so I can survive. And then getting other people online and getting them to sort of get involved in the company and start doing more things. Something I'm learning now that I'm now full-time CEO of the company is that we can do more if delegated properly and with the right people behind their own specific helms, if that makes sense. So sort of like I'm the captain, and then you have other people doing different things on the ship in order to get it done. That's like managing social media. We need to expand the brand for more IP stuff. And just basically I'm trying to find the best way of expanding this and really building it and make it profitable and work. And it has everything to do with relations with marketing and merchandising and a lot of the things that I haven't been able to like pay attention to so closely over the last couple years, because I've been doing this, you know, part time. Now that I'm coming at it full time, I really want to do get more productions out there, start doing more active community things, bring in more people, and just finding a better way to bridge the gap between us and our fans, and spreading the word out there, and really building something that that can kind of take over in the space. Because I think you have to really build a company and make it strong in order for it to survive, to, you know, be able to make content that lasts years and years and years. And I think by doing that and setting the foundation, I'll be able to make many more productions in the future and much bigger ones, and have the financial backing to do it without having to go to Kickstarter or directly to the fans to fund it.
Some of the other things, can we talk about the book, incidentally? Can I ask you about
that?
Oh, yeah.
It's all in progress. And matter of fact, a lot of the book is being worked on simultaneously with the production I'm attached to now, to sort of like fill in the gaps and make the give it a bit of a better manual to being the Hollywood style, or matching that sort of like level.
So what's the plan for the book? Are you just outlining it at the moment, or have you started writing it?
No, I've been writing it for a couple months now. The outlines I've been doing progressively. Like as I was producing Lockdown, I was constantly going back and putting something into my outline and being like, oh, this would be great to do this, and oh, this is a great principle of sound, and this is if you're editing, this is a great technique for doing this and this and this. So I've been building the outline for a long time, and then now what I'm doing is actually getting the words on the page. And I might have maybe 40% of the book written. It's going pretty well. I've been working on building like story tools to, like, say for instance, somebody's coming into the world of audio drama for the first time and trying to pick a story that's going to be good for audio drama, because I think that's also something that there's so many aspects of the audio entertainment that you have to consider, that even picking your topic and picking where you start and your types of characters and things like that and how you introduce them, and there's so many like little intricate details of strategy involved in terms of designing a story specifically for audio that people don't consider. Like, instead of jumping into environments that people don't have any relative knowledge about, is starting where something is like, oh, I understand what a farm looks like, but if you throw me on a spaceship, I have no idea and no relation of what that spaceship looks like. So things like that are sort of like the principles of the audio drama narrative that I think I'm trying to put into the book. And so it's a lot of elements like that of how you create something, and all the way down to just even using the tools, like how do you use Pro Tools specifically tailored for workflows with audio dramas and things like that. And even things like one of the topics that I'm covering is like how you break down a script for scheduling with so many actors that you don't even have a chance to schedule them all at the same time. So it takes the studio level of things to the next level, I think.
Will it be the sort of book that you just keep thinking of stuff and then it's going to end up like the thickest book ever?
Yeah, it might, actually. It definitely might. I've been working on it for such a long time that I'm like, oh, this is great. How do I put it in?
Maybe it should be a series of books.
It could be. I don't think that would be a success. I think having one manual is a good way to start. And also, I'm one of the things that I'm working on, I have long-term plans, and one of them is actually I'm designing right now an audio drama course at a university, and trying to make the foundation for that work. I have to have sort of a textbook to base it off of. And the other reason why I'm writing the book is for my own selfish reasons, is I've brought so many people to work for me in the medium that I'm having to explain things so many times to people that are not familiar with it, that it's really starting to become tiresome to like retell it over and over and over. So now I'm going to have a manual, be like, hey, you want to know principles of sound and how you deal with all this stuff? Here's the book. Go ahead and read it, and you can then let's have a conversation after that. That way I don't have to explain as much stuff.
What about doing the course then? What might that look like in the future?
The course would be a lot of Basically practical exercises in creating audio dramas. What I would sort of tailor the class to do is they would come in with ideas for producing something like a really small half-hour audio drama. And I would have them come in with scripts. We would work with the as a team to kind of figure out how you can best convey things through the script. And there would be sort of two... my idea is to like have productions going in the class, going along and two teams of people basically creating them and taking them through the entire process of casting and recording and sort of like being there on set with everybody as they do these things, but also giving them the freedom of like producing it on their own. And I think a lot of it's specifically designed in a way to help students in a film school become better writers and producers through using only the tool of audio. Because I feel like whenever I'm working with these students before and reading scripts that they're writing, and they're all focused on the visuals of the screen. And I think that's been a huge crutch for them in a negative way, because they don't care about dialogue. They don't care about interactions of characters. Things are disingenuine. It's just, people are so inundated with visuals that they're not thinking of the fundamentals of screenwriting. They're not thinking of the fundamentals of storytelling. And I think when you take all that away, what it does is you're basically doing a workout with one specific muscle. You can hone your talents and abilities in one area and become a better storyteller ultimately by only using one of those tools. So then when, like, say for instance, audio drama isn't your thing, when you go back into the world of filmmaking, you're like, oh, I get it. And the dialogue should improve because you've just had more experience with it. And it's just, I don't know, it just, for me, it seems like a great foundation in the fundamentals of how you tell a story effectively to someone.
So again, is there a sort of time frame for that, for you becoming essentially a professor of audio drama?
Yeah, I'm already the book is going fast and furious, and my deadline to get it done is have it done by the class, which is an interterm, which is about January this next year. So I definitely need to get on it and get that book done. The class actually might have a draft of my book, and then as the class goes on, I might make some revisions before publishing it. I do want to get it out there as soon as possible, but I also am realistic with, like, I want to make sure it's done and done right, and it makes perfect sense, because there's some things that I'm trying to explain on paper, which is great in the audio world, but sometimes hard to communicate on just, you know, black and white words.
How would people go about applying for the class? I mean, it is going to be an on-location exercise, so there's the logistics there, but can anyone apply, presuming that they've got the time to and the money to travel and do it?
I think so. Because it's an interterm class, you might be able to... It's looking to be through Chapman University, the place that I worked at before, and I pitched it to the dean, and they've loved it. I think the first introductory course is, once they get established, I think it's going to be hard to figure out how to get people from, because I think you have to actually apply. I'm not certain how that works, or if you can audit the course externally or just pay for the course outright. Because it's a private university, I know the classes are going to be a little expensive, so I don't know how that's going to work out too well, but that's a lot of things we're going to have to figure out in the end. But yeah, I do believe that if you are motivated enough and want to do it, I think they will allow outside people to come into the class as long as they're willing to pay the tuition fee.
Is there somewhere anyone listening should keep an eye on for details on that?
Yeah, follow me on social media, because I will be posting about it once the class goes up and things like that. I'll probably do a blog about it on my website, wayland.ws. So I will keep up with the information as it comes in. Right now it's still taking a little bit of time. The book has to come first, which is my first focus. Also the school is preparing for the fall semester, and they're not really focused on the interterm semester just yet, so they haven't really started to get all the foundations of the infrastructure for people to sign up established yet. That's going to be a little bit down the line.
I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I did want to ask you about there was a story in the news fairly recently about you working on an audio drama with Lawrence Fishburne. So what can you tell us about that?
Yes, that's the production that I'm working on now, and sort of one of the nice checks and balances for the books, because I'm in the Hollywood system of working with all these different elements and sort of going to the next level is, how do you make this work in the studio environment? How do you deal with agencies on the next level, so to speak? And so I think that this production that I'm attached to is really beneficial in that aspect. What can I can say about it? They try and keep a lid on of everything just because they're trying to keep it secretive. And it's one of those things where I no longer now control the information like I do with We're Alive, with the, you know, production details. So it's what I can say is it's got Lawrence Fishburne. It's a pretty amazing. It's a little bit more of a gangster story that takes place in Bronzeville in Chicago. I believe it's the early turn of the century. I believe it's 1930s. I can't think off the top of my head. It's been a long morning, but yeah. So it's very cool. It's a lot of gangster stuff. Very amazing characters. It's got a great writer, Josh Olson, who did A History of Violence, who's an Academy Award nominated writer. Is helming that, and it's really fun. It's something different. I'm having a interesting go at it. It's the transition between all these things and dealing with different agencies and catering, and like it really is like locked down to the next level of like just the logistics behind it. And it's also I'm learning a lot about the industry in general, and it's also my first time working with because I got representation through Paradigm this last year, and so it's my first time really working with them and having, you know, how you deal with even accounting stuff and things like that. Like, you get paid and you have to now have self-employment taxes you have to worry about and things like that. So it's going well. It's definitely a learning process. The story's great, the characters are great, and matter of fact, we go into the recording studio here pretty quick, and It's gonna be released fast and furious. So I think people will be surprised at how early it might appear. And I can definitely say it's gonna be 2016 as current plan.
So your job then is the recording and production of it.
I'm in a weird position where my technical, I think I can say my technical like title is line producer. But I'm also in charge of production, like the production element sides of things, where it's like the recording studio, post-production, sort of like a post-production supervisor at the same time. And I've assisted with some things with the scripts. And so it's like, yeah, I'm sort of like the jack of all trades behind the scenes that has like, there's no title for what I've been doing at this point. And so that's even a thing to kind of figure out in the future is what it is, like the positions on the sets and things like that. And that's something that I'm learning and actually putting in the book of like what my recommendations are. Like, here are the key positions you want to have to make sure that you have a unified a vision and experience. Because there are some things that I'm learning through the system. Like, oh, this works great. This doesn't work as great. Let's try and move this. Let's somebody who's in charge of this, this, and this would be better than if it was this person in charge of this. So it's a lot of learning at the same time and sort of like figuring things out. But honestly, I think it's like the most perfect opportunity to use this as a case study and to write the book. And matter of fact, when we go into the recording studio, I'm going to be doing a lot of writing on the book during that time in the evenings to kind of like, oh, this is sort of like this came up today and maybe I can put this into the book. So yeah, it's a lot of learning and adjusting, but I think it's going to be an amazing production when it's all done.
And on top of that, I did notice when I got to episode 6 of Lockdown, something called Gold Rush mentioned in the show notes. What can you tell us about that? Is that a We're Alive production?
Yeah, that is the next Lockdown, so to speak. So Gold Rush is a very different style genre of We're Alive. It's that's something that I'm learning about the audio drama medium is you can actually switch styles easily. And it's accepted by the audience. Like, Lockdown was a completely different feeling than We're Alive. Gold Rush, same way. So I can, with every production that I build on, I don't have to do the same thing twice. I can do something totally new, do a different style, do a different genre, whole new characters, and really, like, create something that is unique and standalone. And so Gold Rush is, the style of it is, and put bluntly, it's a Western survival horror audio theater for the mind comedy. So if you want to throw all those things together, it's like a Western zombie audio theater, like all these things together. It's like, what are you doing? So it's going to be fun. It's a little bit more off the cuff. The people I've got involved are pretty amazing performers, and it's going to be an experiment, and it's going to be like, hey, can we make this work? And I think if I can make Gold Rush successful, then I can prove that the genre is so flexible that you can really do anything you want inside your own IPs and your own stories. Because if I can do comedies at the same time of doing, something very serious and like make this hybrid model. And so I really think that you have the versatility to do some amazing things, more so than you can do on film. Film, you are stuck. Like if you make Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2 has to be similar, you know, in some ways. And with this, it's not the case.
Just to get us wrapped up then, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are just starting out in audio drama. We have a lot of listeners who haven't taken their first steps yet. What's the best piece of advice that you could give to these folks who are really in the very start of their audio drama production journeys?
I would say if anybody's at the core, the main thing you need to start focusing on from the get-go and get right and work on much more in advance than jumping into the recording booth is your story, is the script, is going through and making sure everything is clear as possible. There's a key phrase that I'm sort of like using as a model for the book. The book title, the audio drama book that I'm writing is called Bombs Always Beep, meaning that in the audio drama world, you need to illustrate something with sound. You need to illustrate it with some sort of aural quality so that we can understand what's going on. And so when you have a bomb, it's always got a beep because that's how you illustrate something through sound. And so one of the things that I sort of am outlining in there is like once you get into the recording booth, it's already too late. So spend the time at the outline, getting your story right. And the key element is confusion is the killer of all audio dramas. So as long as you keep that in mind and focus on clarity first, and then build a story around it and think to yourself, does this make sense? Is someone going to understand what's going on with just the voices and sound effects in the scene? Because if not, then you're failing. Because you do not want to have somebody who's listening to your story and going, wait, what did they say? What's going on? Because the minute that happens, your story's already going. There's no visual cues to catch somebody up, and they're going to get lost. And that's something that you have to be incredibly aware of early on is making sure that the audience knows the story you're telling and knows the information behind it. Because if you're not communicating effectively with them, then your story's just going to get lost in the ethers, and it's not going to resonate with your audience, and they're not going to be interested in what you're telling.
Yeah, people absolutely hate to be confused, don't they? They hate to feel like they don't know what's going on. And like you say, a story could really suffer from a lack of clarity.
Yeah, especially in the audio drama world, because you don't have a fallback. Somebody can't go back and reread the section you are. I mean, yes, they can skip back if they really want to, and people do that. But for the most part, people don't do that. They just keep going. And they, just like a TV show, if they don't understand something, they're just going to keep moving along. So not like a book, they can't reread that section. So you just have to make sure you get it right from the get-go and maybe even repeat the things that you need to make them clear and character names and things like that. So all sort of like the principles, but I think at the core is just keeping it clear.
So where can we keep up with all your future announcements and things like that online? What websites and social media channels and things like that?
My social media is I'm on Twitter at WaylandProd. That's WaylandProd. If you search Casey Wayland on Facebook or go to WhereLive.com, all of our information is listed on there for news and things like that. I have my own personal website that I use for the business called Wayland.ws, which is our Wayland production site, which I'll have a little bit more background. I've done some personal blogs about some audio production stuff there. And so I have different avenues. And honestly, one of the nice things about the new business is I'm already working. Matter of fact, today I'm going to be bringing on somebody possibly new to start maybe dealing with that social media aspect of things.